it's not greed that runs the world. It's not money that runs the world. It's not men that run the world. It's not some mafia or the Illuminati that run the world. Envy runs the world. Why is that the case? So, before we start, I'm having an Italian roast coffee today from Sainsbury's. Not as good as the Lavazza one that I had last week, but still does the job. I'm now 21, so that's why this mug has 21 on it. So I'm getting older. But you may think that greed runs the world or money runs the world, but it is envy. And envy is one of the most basic human emotions that we have, and it's inbuilt in our brains. But what envy does is it basically threatens our social standing, our social status. So if we see someone doing better than us, we get that hit and that stab in our stomach that's almost uncontrollable. And it causes resent in us towards that person. And it's because they're doing better than us in some fundamental way, including our status. They might be higher status than us now, or they might have more money than us, or they might be more successful than us. And that causes us to be envious. And it can be dangerous, especially if you're an envious person, because if you envy people, you don't necessarily get better because of that. You actually just seem insecure. And a lot of people don't take action on it as well. So they are envious, but they stay the same. They don't try and improve themselves. It's a bit different if you are jealous of someone or envious of someone, and then you change your behavior or try to be more like them if they have some qualities that are desirable for you. Let's say they have started a business and it's doing really well, and you want to start a business, but you haven't yet because you know, you haven't taken action. You're being a deferrer, like we spoke about in the previous episode. And you now have the motivation to start a business because they did it and they're succeeding. And that reminded you that you can start one, and you were meant to be the guy who was going to start a business. And that gives you the motivation, the fuel to start your own one. Now, the problem would be is if you started a business because someone else did and because you envy them, because you're not playing your own game, you're playing their game, and you don't want to win at a game that you haven't decided to play. You want to win at your own game, and that means doing something that you genuinely enjoy and you get satisfaction from. You know, you don't want to be a lawyer just because you think lawyers make money and they're high status. You want to be a lawyer because you genuinely enjoy that profession. So envy can be a good way to give you the right fuel, but it only is a good thing if you actually pursue something that you want to pursue, and you see someone who's done something that you want to do and you want to emulate them. But that isn't really envy, is it? That's more admiration. Oh, there's a bug in my coffee. Wait, let me get that out. There's a little bug in my coffee. That's the problem of having a coffee outdoors. So you'll probably notice once you start doing the thing that you want to do, whether it's trying to become an athlete, trying to start your own business, trying to start your own podcast, you'll notice that at the start, nobody cares and you're telling everyone about it and you haven't made any progress yet. You've just started. So everyone's like, oh, good for you. You're pursuing your dreams. Oh, that's really cool. But maybe a few months pass, a year passes, 2 years pass, and you have made a lot more progress. You know, you've got some more followers, or you've got bigger, or you've competed in some races as an athlete and you've won some, you've got some regional medals. You'll often notice that the people that you met at the start of your journey that you're not very close friends with, or you might be very close friends with, they start changing their behavior once you get a little bit of success. They seem a bit resentful of you. They give you a few backhanded compliments like, oh, you're so great. You've got it all figured out, don't you? you know, it must be easy for you, must be nice. You know, the classic statement that I'm sure a lot of you have experienced if you've been doing something different and you're getting success from it. And you might be a bit hurt by that because we have this inbuilt desire to be liked by others and to fit in with the tribe and be high social status. And when people give you those backhanded compliments or insult you for trying to be different or doing something different, it may seem like your social status is actually being lowered. But you should definitely take it as a compliment, because what they're saying is you've grown. You've done something that I can't do or that I want to do and I haven't done it yet, and that's making me insecure. Therefore, you've actually increased your status, and that's made them status insecure, and they're taking that insecurity out on you. Therefore, it's to do with them and has nothing to do with you. It's just a reflection of their limiting beliefs and their insecurities. But it's something I've been noticing the last couple of weeks. You know, I've made some progress on the podcast. It's growing. I've been getting really cool guests on the show. I've been doing well, particularly on YouTube. I've managed to get monetized over the last couple of weeks. And I've been doing these episodes where I tell a bit more about myself. And I've noticed a few more backhanded compliments like, oh, you've got it all figured out, don't you? Oh, must be nice. Oh, and then what happens if the podcast doesn't work? Do you have a plan B? Just stuff like that. And, you know, even someone who repeats to themselves all the time, you know, it's just take it as a compliment. It's nothing to do with you. We still have that negativity bias built into our brains. And it's just very interesting to see as soon as you get a little bit of progress, not even success, a little bit of progress, it, as soon as you're slightly set apart from what you were before, people begin to envy it. And the problem is they may envy it, but they do not envy the work it took to get there. So you might see this person have a really successful business, might be doing really well. And from 6 months ago, they started with nothing. And now it's been 6 months and they've upgraded their lifestyle slightly. They've got a bit more money. They're making profit. They've employed a few people. You don't see the hard work. What you see is the material and objective difference between their lives from 6 months ago and now. And that makes you envious because it seems like they got it easily and it came easy to them, or they cheated. But what you don't see is the thousands of hours behind closed doors, waking up early or staying up late, working on that business, being so uncertain whether it's going to work, being stressed, being burnt out, and sacrificing weekends or sacrificing socializing to get to where they got to. Because a lot of people don't show that, they don't show that vulnerability, that dark side of trying to become successful, they're actually shooting themselves in the foot, because it makes it seem like it's the success has come easy to them, and therefore people envy them more. Must be easy for you, must be nice. So it's partly the person's fault, but it's also inbuilt in human nature. But what you definitely shouldn't do is bend the knee and try and fit back into the normal tribe and become more humble, or lower your self-esteem and lower your belief in yourself just because a few people have given you a few backhanded compliments. That's actually the opposite of what you should do. A lot of the time, these people that are envious secretly admire you and they want to be more like you, but they don't want to show that because that's a weakness. And if you then start acting more normal and stop posting the podcast or stop doing the races or stop sharing your achievements, you're actually doing the opposite of what they admire you for, and therefore they'll forget about you completely and they'll stop talking about you or stop wanting to hang out with you, even though when you're hanging out with them, they might be giving you backhanded compliments or they might be envious of you. They secretly admire you, and they won't admire you if you stop doing what you're doing. So if you ever get a bit of envy, a bit of resent, a bit of criticism, which you will get if you're doing something different and you're progressing and you're succeeding at it, don't stop doing that thing, because you're not getting criticism because you're doing the wrong thing. You're getting criticism because you're doing the right thing. And by doing the right thing, most people don't do that. And therefore they envy it, and therefore they criticize you. But it's actually a way of them, or the way of the insecure, complimenting you. So that's a note on envy to myself and to you, because I need to remind myself of that as well, because, you know, I'm getting a few jibs and jabs here and there at the moment. And, you know, don't take it personally. Let it just reflect off you and try and post-rationalize it and take it as a compliment. Obviously, in the moment, you're going to get that bit of feeling because we're still cavemen and we still think we're in a little tribe when we're not. So yeah, it's definitely good to be aware of how our brains operate. And from what I've read and from what a lot of people say, our brains haven't changed for hundreds of thousands of years, or at least tens of thousands of years, maybe even, and maybe not a million years, but a long time. You know, evolution seems to be pretty slow as far as I'm aware. That means, well, first of all, think about how different 2025 is, or whenever you're watching this, the 2000s or the 3000s. I don't know how long this is going to last, how long this video is going to last in time, but think about how different that is to 10,000 years ago when we, or 100,000 years ago when we were just nomads, or we were in little hunter-gatherer tribes, or we were in little farmland villages. Even a couple hundred years ago, when there weren't any aeroplanes, there were maybe just boats that would take months, and half the world hadn't been discovered yet. There was no internet, there was no phones. Society was very different. I mean, human nature stays the same across this, which is kind of the problem, because we still are less developed, or I wouldn't say developed, maybe our amygdala and our lower brain, our brainstem, which evolved before our prefrontal cortex, which helps us, you know, make executive decisions and plan and rationalize and all these things. That part of our brain, the monkey brain, the lizard brain, still thinks we're in this little tribe. And if we get criticized or kicked out of the tribe, then we're going to die. But what we are in now is actually this age of almost freedom, especially if you're in a Western developed country, and you're way more free than anyone has ever been before. We have better living conditions than ever before. It's better to be a lower middle class person in 2025 than a nobleman in King Louis XIV's France, because there's vaccinations, there's antibiotics, there's clean water, there's warm water, there's cheap food, there's cheap transport that actually has nutrition. We don't have to go down mining or be a slave or be a peasant. You know, the peasants of 2025 have fantastic living conditions if you're in a Western country, compared to if you were a peasant in the like 5th century, for example. You know, there's way less disease, there's no smallpox, there's no Black Death, and you have a lot of freedom if you have a bit of money to go to university or to explore the world, go traveling. This is unheard of until the last 50 years or century for 99% of people, even in more developed countries like Spain, England, USA. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And yet our brains still think we're in a little tribe of 100 or 50 people, and we are stuck in that tribe and we can't move, and our livelihoods depend on the rest of the tribe liking us or not, which sucks, because we have all this freedom now. We can choose where we want to live. We can try and make enough money, which has never been easier, and find a new group of friends, or find a new country, or find a new place to live. But the back of our minds is always that nagging caveman who's telling us, no, don't try and be different. You'll die if you try and be different. But you have to consciously, with your prefrontal cortex or cerebral cortex, the outer part of the brain, you have to remind yourself, you're not a caveman. You're not in like 100,000 BC. You're not living in a cave. You're not living in a small tribe. You're not a hunter-gatherer. You are able to do whatever you want to do. And the other people will criticize you because they still think they're in the hunter-gatherer times, and they still think that the tallest poppy is the first one to get cut down, you know, tall poppy syndrome, crabs in a bucket mentality. And you just have to ignore it, and you have to ignore your zero sum, scarcity, limiting belief, caveman in your brain as well, because it's so easy for me to say, oh, everyone else is, you know, tall poppy syndrome. They're going to try and drag you down because they're insecure and they don't like seeing you doing better than them. But you have that in your brain as well. Your brain also tries to sabotage you and bring you back down and give you these limiting beliefs. Oh, I can't do this. I can't make money. I can't start a podcast. I can't become a pro athlete, but you can. And it's never been easier to do so if you just stick with it and don't stop and stay consistent. It's that simple. So just don't stop, and don't stop trying to go against the grain, really. It's never been easier. Oh, coffee's getting a bit cold. Hopefully there's not another bug in there and I swallow it by accident. But yeah, just got to stay consistent, because if you stick with something long enough, you'll get the desired results, you'll get the freedom, you'll get the life that you want to live. And the best part about making enough money is you're in complete control of your time if you're doing something you enjoy, obviously. It's different if you're a surgeon or a lawyer, or you're not your own boss, because you might be making like $1 million a year, but you're still working 80 hours a week. So you're not really free, are you? The whole point of making money, in my opinion, is to buy freedom and control of your time to do the things that you want to do and the things that you care about. There's a lot of birds around right now. Blue tits behind me. I was just walking this morning. There's a little park opposite my house, and it's really nice. There's a lot of different trees from a lot of different countries, and the leaves are starting to turn. There's leaves from the floor. Birds are still singing, but they're getting quieter. And there's also, I noticed, a grey squirrel, and it was seeming like it was caching nuts in the ground. So it would collect some food, collect some nuts, and then it would dig them, store them underground, and then leave them over winter. So if food reserves get a bit too low, they can go back if they remember where it is, and they'll have this little food supply. It's like a little, like, I guess, refrigerator or food storage for them to fall back on when times get tough in winter. So the squirrels are already doing that. They're already preparing for winter. And it's really interesting, because you might know this or might not, but we have a lot of grey squirrels in the UK. They're everywhere. They're big. They're quite, not aggressive, but, you know, they're there. And they're not actually native to the UK. So in America, I think in the 1800s, maybe early 1900s, the grey squirrels were imported from America. And we had red squirrels, which are found in Europe, mainland Europe, still to this day. And what happened was the squirrels got released into large estates and gardens in the UK in a few locations, and they spread like wildfire because they're more, and they pushed the red squirrels away because they're more aggressive, they're bigger, and they outcompeted the red squirrels. And they also carry a thing called squirrel pox, which they're immune to, but the red squirrels aren't. So it completely decimated the red squirrel population in the UK. And there's only red squirrel populations in the most remote parts of the UK nowadays. There have been some reintroductions, but there's only some strongholds on places like the Isle of Wight, because it's an island, a small island. Anglesey, separated from Wales by water. So the grey squirrels haven't been able to get there yet. And also parts of Scotland and northern England, where it's just very densely and remote. So they've still been able to thrive in them forests. So it's crazy. There's been some crazy alien or invasive species that have just completely wiped out the native wildlife just through transport and trade and colonization. Same thing for house sparrows in the US and Australia. They're native to Europe, they're native to England, and they were released. Maybe they went on the boats, so, or maybe people purposely released them, and they just completely like taken over some parts of the world as a consequence. But to be honest, I think grey squirrels get a very bad reputation. We love the red squirrel because it's smaller, it's cuter, and it's like an actual native species, and then the grey squirrels are bigger, they're a bit more aggressive, they're everywhere, so they're seen as a bad guy. But it's not their fault they got introduced to the UK, is it? It's the humans that brought them over there. And, you know, they get a bad reputation, but I think they're cute. I think they're cool. And, yeah, it was just really cool seeing them digging and storing the nuts for this winter. So, yeah, winter's going to be an interesting one this year. The sea temperature has dropped in Cornwall by about 4 degrees already. And I went in there yesterday from the sauna, and it was so much colder than 2 weeks ago. And it's interesting. It must be an ocean current changing the course of the water temperature, because normally in September and October, it's actually much warmer. It's the warmest time of year for the sea, because the sea's like big and I guess dense. It takes a longer time for it to warm up, but also a longer time for it to cool down. So normally in September and October, it's warmest because it's had all of summer to slowly heat up, and it hasn't decrease in temperature yet, even when the air temperature has. But man, it was so cold compared to a few weeks ago. So it's winter is coming, my friends, so be prepared and get the most of the sunshine and the light before it goes away if you're living in a northern hemisphere country and you're listening or watching this. But I could smell the difference of the water. Like, the water actually smelled cold. That's the best way I can describe it. It was very, very cold, but very refreshing. And that's the good thing about living near the sea and living near a sauna that's next to the sea. It's, you can have that warm and cold exposure, which is really good for our bodies. It gives you energy, it gives you a lot of dopamine, but it also helps your immune system, helps with circulation and recovery, loads of different things. I wonder why that is the case. I know that when you exercise, for example, although you're like hurting your body, you're like tearing muscle fibers, for example, you get such a rush of endorphins, endogenous, like basically opium in your brain from doing a hard thing, which is very interesting, because one half of our brain, or one part of our brain, wants us to be lazy and slough around and not do anything. And another part of our brain wants to do hard things. And when you dive into the more hard things side of your behavior in your brain, in the moment, in the short term, at first it may be tough and it may be painful, but you get such a good long-term benefit. So gym's the best example. Going to the gym, you're literally putting yourself under stress, you're lifting heavy stuff away from your body, you're tearing your muscles, and it's hard, especially at the beginning. And you then feel amazing afterwards because you get the endorphins, the natural painkiller, the natural opium almost response, and that lasts basically for hours afterwards. You're way more energized, you're way better, you feel way better about yourself, and then you begin to enjoy it almost in a masochistic way, but in just a progress way, because you get results from it and you get health benefits from it. And I just find that really interesting. A lot of the time it's short-term pain for long-term gain, and then a lot of the vices and the degenerate things are short-term gain for long-term pain. The best example of that again is alcohol and drugs. So for alcohol, you get the short-term gain of disinhibition, you get more serotonin or dopamine, you feel more relaxed, you feel more sociable, you know, in the moment is great a lot of the time. But then that's the short-term gain of alcohol. And then the long-term is pain. You get liver problems, your skin gets worse, you have a higher chance of cancer, you feel hungover the next day, your sleep's messed up, everything's terrible, especially if you do it for a long period of time. Compare that to going in the sauna or going in the gym or working on something that you love, that's hard. In the short term, it's stressful, it's difficult, you may enjoy it, but it's still mentally taxing or physically taxing. But in the long term, you're making progress, you're getting better, you're getting stronger, you're getting healthier, and you get a kick of endorphins after you do it. So a lot of success and enjoyment, long-term enjoyment in life, is from doing things that hurt or are stressful or painful in the moment, but give you a long-term benefit and are good for you in the long term. So that's one of the benefits of doing stuff like going to the gym, for example. And not enough people do that. I think it's only like 3% of the population that go to the gym. I thought it was more, but obviously that's just like availability bias. Damn, there's like a little spider in this coffee now. Am I just like drinking bugs for breakfast? without realizing. It's crazy. But yeah, it's cloudy right now and it hasn't rained. It's not going to rain today, but in the back of my mind, I keep thinking it might rain just because you never know in Cornwall. But it's interesting. I'm trying to be really less like 10-hour work days at the moment. I'm rereading the 4-Hour Work Week, which I recommend everyone reading. It's by Tim Ferriss. I mentioned it in previous stuff. And I'm just trying to spend 2 to 3 hours, maybe even 4, but normally 2 to 3 hours on the most important tasks of the day, and then leave the rest of my day to read, to go to the gym, to go to the sauna, to socialize, etc., etc. And it's good, and you realize how like wired and just kind of burnt your brain can be if you do too much work during the day. If you're just sat in front of your laptop and it's not actually that enjoyable. You may think it's enjoyable, but then once you work for 2 or 3 hours a day and then you spend the rest of your day doing what I just said before, doing other healthy productive habits, you realize, oh wow, maybe I was doing too much. But then it's also that tension between, am I doing enough? Am I going to stall my progress? Because I'm still doing all of this solo. I'm still editing, scheduling, repurposing, recording, all of that stuff by myself. And I cannot wait to, you know, employ people and get an editor and get a scheduler. I need to do that as soon as possible, really. But I'm going to try and do it for at least 4 weeks. Just try and do the essential stuff. And the most important thing for me is recording. Recording is the most important task. But then obviously I've got to edit it, but with this mindset of being sent, like doing the essential task only, you try and edit it as fast as possible and don't do any of the extra stuff that don't get you much progress. Because realistically, 99% of the things you do, even if it's something productive, is actually not getting you the results that you want. There'll be one video that gets you most of your new subscribers and views, or there'll be one exercise in the gym that will get you the most progress, or there'll be part of your business that gets you the most profit, or one aspect of your product. And at the start, it's hard because you don't really know what's working. But once you progress a few months later and you've thrown enough things at the wall, you need to see what sticks and then start doing mostly just what sticks instead of doing all the other stuff that actually don't move the ball as far forward. So I'm struggling with it in the sense that I don't want to lose progress. I need to like respond to emails and email more people to come onto the show and schedule my like short form content, and whilst also focusing on just doing the essential stuff like recording the long episodes. So yeah, it's a little bit difficult, and it's hard to like relax, because I guess I enjoy working towards it and I don't want to stop myself from working towards it. But you need to remember, it's like a lot of the time, a lot of the things you're doing, you're just working for work's sake, as Tim Ferriss calls it. You're just falling into the busy trap, and being busy is a form of laziness. I do agree with that. And so I just need to knuckle down and do the essential stuff and, you know, batch stuff together, like scheduling all the short form content at once. So that's something that you can learn from this, is instead of doing one little thing every day, like checking your emails every single day, or like repurposing your clips every day, maybe wait a week and then respond to all your emails at once. Wait a week and schedule and create all your short form content all at once in 1, 2, 3 hour block. That's actually better, because then you have the rest of your time away from that task and you still get it done, and it's more efficient, it's more effective. So yeah, it's a good experiment I'm gonna be doing, and I seem to fall between this 4-hour work week method and then more the Alex Hormozy wake up and get on with work straight away and alpha male work 12 hours a day. And if both get the same results, which they probably do, because I know of creators and podcasters and people that I look up to that do both those methods. There'll be a subset of people that do 12-hour days, like work the entire day, monk mode, and then there'll be the like work 2 hours a day, just do the essential task, get it done. Both of them people have got results. As examples that I know of, both people that have got results from doing those two styles. So if that's the case, I'd rather be doing the essential work less but do the highest leverage task than the sit in front of your computer for 14 hours doing little things like that aren't going to add up to your desired result. I'd rather be doing the essential tasks, because if the essential tasks get me 80% of my desired results, and like if 20% of the tasks I do get me 80% of the results, and then the other 80% only get me 20%, you know, the 80-20 law or the Pareto power law, that's what that is, then I just want to do the 20% of stuff. Why do I need to do the other 80% of stuff? I can outsource that. I can hire someone to do that, like schedule the episodes or repurpose the episodes for me. And then I can just focus more on recording this or recording the guest episodes or getting guests to come onto the show. So if you're struggling with time management or productivity, then that a good book to read is The 4-Hour Workweek. And you'll realize 80, 90, 99% of the things you do don't actually lead to your desired results. But obviously, at first, you need to do a lot of different things and then see which ones give you the most of your desired results. And that you have to do a lot of things to identify what is the few things that get you the most happiness and fulfillment and desired results. So yeah, throw a lot of things at the wall first, but once you've thrown a lot of things at the wall and seen what sticked, just do the sticky stuff. Do more of the sticky stuff. That's what I like. That's how I like to call it. But yeah, it's also good to just do the thing, even if you're not motivated to do it before you start. So for example, I woke up this morning and last night, and my essential task was to edit and edit my full episode and then schedule all my shorts and that full episode. But then I remembered it was Friday, and I promised to myself Friday mornings I'm going to be doing Waking Up with Waha or WH, the solo episodes. And I wasn't like stoked to do it last night, and I was tired and etc. So that definitely played a part into it. And then I woke up this morning, I was like, do I have enough time to do it? But after a walk and a coffee and a little bit of a reading, I just didn't even think, just turned my brain off, came out here, set up the camera, sat down, and as soon as I started, I was fine. I enjoyed it. I had things to talk about. So that can be applied to anything. And like I was saying about the short-term pain and the long-term gain, a lot of the time, because we know it's painful in the short term, you know, we have to sit down and think of things to say, and you know, we know it's going to be a bit mentally taxing. It for a lot of people, it creates that wall that they need to climb over, that they feel like they need the motivation. They need something. It's hard. There's friction before you start. And that's what causes procrastination. You know, we have this friction before we start a task and we just avoid it instead of just getting over it. But once you just turn your brain off and within 5 minutes and do the task, and within 5 minutes of the task, you realize it wasn't actually that hard. You go into more of a flow state and you just get on with it. So it's just a good reminder. It's the same as, like I said many times, the gym again. Gym analogies are always great, aren't they? I got legs today, right? And I could easily be like, oh, legs, man, it's going to be painful. It's going to hurt so much. But if you just, despite those thoughts, right? Because you, like people, we will have those thoughts. It doesn't matter what you think, it's how you behave. Despite those thoughts, you still show up to the gym and you still get on with it. Within 5 minutes of doing your leg press or doing your leg extensions, your brain's going to be switched off and you're just going to go into autopilot and routine mode and actually begin to enjoy it or feel content about it. It's just always before we do something we think it's going to be way harder and way more taxing than it is. And then once we do it, once we start, we go into a flow state and we get on with it and we feel great afterwards. So it's not like you're not going to have that resistant and tense and feeling of friction before you start a task. Everyone's going to have that. But the difference between those who succeed in the long term and those who continue to defer and continue to procrastinate is they do the thing despite that feeling of friction and uncertainty and doubt. And once they start, they realize, why did I worry or why did I think this was going to be so hard all along? So if there's something you've got to do today that you know is mentally taxing, or you're procrastinating and you're putting it off, just start it. And within 5 minutes, you'll completely forget that you're procrastinating to begin with. So probably going to leave it at that. Like I said, got to do a few other things, got to edit and hopefully schedule the shorts as well. And then do legs at the gym, do a bit of core because my back is so tight. So I think it might be because I've not been training core enough, but who knows? We'll see. So yeah, I'll leave it there. I think that was that volume 3 of Waking Up with Waha? I think it was. It's volume 3 or 4. But yeah, go out in nature, do the thing, even though it might be a lot of friction and might be a lot of procrastination. And I'm rooting for you. Just don't stop. And if you get criticism, if you get backhanded compliments, that is the leading indicator that you are doing the right thing, my friend. So hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will see you next Sunday morning. That was Waking Up with Waha, volume 3 or 4. I think it was volume 3. See you later, guys.